All right, you ready?
Yeah, now I'm good.
Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast about the history and death and decomposure. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max.
It's like Blues
Clues. How you doing, Max?
It's like a very Blues Clues.
I'm good.
Is this because of the Grammys?
Yeah, we're recording. Instead of watching the Grammys, we are recording a podcast. And I didn't want you to be deprived of...
Okay.
A little bit of music in your life.
Are you making that up right now or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I just figured I'd try something different and sing the opening.
It is fun. I liked it. Now I'm smiling.
I'm kind of curious if it is in the same key as our intro song from Brackhurst, but I'll find out when I edit. Anyway, how you been?
you're gonna pitch it up.
Auto tune it.
Yeah.
Yes. How you been, man?
Yeah, I've been good. I don't know. It's warm outside.
Yeah. It's also warm in here in the Pre-Dead Boys castle.
It's true.
Because I've hung up soundproofing. And by soundproofing, I mean very warm, woolly blankets. Suspended in the air.
It is nice.
Blocking any echo and warming our souls.
It's toasty. I like it.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of a homey vibe, maybe.
Dorian has also lit a candle.
Yeah.
Which is currently burning a little further away than I would like it to be burning.
Oh, well.
You gonna bring it in? Oh yeah, dude. What is this? What are we working with?
It's pine.
Frosted pine by Candle Essentials.
It was $5 at Target.
That Kroger?
Yeah.
Just north of here?
Yeah.
You know how they have their like oops shelf of like heavily discounted things?
You mean clearance items?
Yeah.
I like calling them the oops shelf.
There's a lot of candles on the oops shelf right now.
Okay. I'll have to check that out.
I'm going there after we record, so I'll update you.
That's good to stock
up
on candles.
Does any good sense? Yeah.
It's good to be in a home that smells nice. I have some friends that I wish would listen to this episode and think about that.
It's not an attack on me, is it?
No, your house smells
fine.
Okay,
good. Okay.
I feel like it actually smelled really nice when we recorded there last time. You maybe had just cooked something or some sort of fragrance. I don't remember.
I just cooked. Yeah. I like cooking.
I remember it smelled good, yeah. So kudos to you. No, I'd tell you. We're good enough friends. I'd tell you if you stink at this point.
My house is bad smelling.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that glowing review. I got a new job, so now I'm like taking the bus to work.
Yeah.
And that's fun.
Does that have smells?
Not a ton, because I'm on the bus at like 7:30 in the morning.
Okay. So before the smelly students hop on?
Yeah. Okay. Going home, it's a little stinkier. Because yeah. I got to go past the gym. All the gym rats hop on. It's stinky.
Stinky boys and girls.
But I got that new bag, which is nice.
I saw that. It looks pretty fresh.
Yeah. It's got like a nice anti-theft because when you try and open it, the Velcro is like hella loud.
Yeah.
Extremely loud. Loud. Unlike, and this is what I was waiting for. Unlike the two voicemails you left me yesterday.
I left you voicemails
yesterday? You left me two voicemails yesterday.
Oh, fuck. Did I butt dial you?
You butt dialed me twice.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, are you checking to see if it's going to pick it up? Because it won't, because it's just 3 minutes of silence. Two full 3 minute voicemails.
Jesus. I apologize.
How did you do that? How do you butt dial?
I don't know, but I've been doing it constantly and it's really embarrassing.
Interesting.
I just shove my phone in my pocket and sometimes I'll shove it in there and I'll hear a
and he'll be like, fuck, I'm calling just some random dude. You're
FaceTiming someone?
Yeah, just calling someone on my contacts list. I don't know. I apologize.
No, I don't. I never answer my phone. So
it only started when I turned 30 too. So I think it's like the first stage of being an old man setting in. It's my first instance of struggling with technology.
Yep.
So, well, while we're roasting each other on shit on our phones, you misspelled my name in your contacts list. So fuck you.
Shit.
I like your wallpaper though. That's pretty chill.
LAFF. I don't want to dox you.
I mean, it's all over the internet everywhere we post this podcast.
That's true. It's your website.
LAFFERRE. Okay. While you're updating your contact information, I'll remind the listener that we didn't sit down here in the pre-Dead Boys castle to talk about cell phones and butt dialing and roast me for my technological incompetence.
And mine, apparently.
We're here to talk about death.
Max, we are.
You've prepared something for us. What have you prepared?
I have. So I got that new job.
Yeah. Congratulations.
And I'm just going to keep saying that until so everyone's just listening to this going, oh, congratulations. Thank you. I'm working at Ohio State. And
oh, wait. Can you specify which Ohio State University?
The. I'm going to get like, that's what they're going to get mad at me about.
Yeah. The Ohio State University.
So I'm working at the Ohio State University.
Right.
And it's huge. It's like a city within a city.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, I'm on the bus a lot now. And a large portion of that city is foreign students.
Okay. Yeah.
Who have been back for a couple weeks from classes, from winter break. A large portion of those foreign students are Chinese, just the way the demographic breakdown works.
Right.
So I've been getting kind of nervous about coronavirus.
Have you now?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's got like a 3-week incubation period.
Okay.
Where there's no symptoms. And if you have it, like you can carry it and have no symptoms and be spreading it and you won't know that you have it.
Okay. I worry about the, like, is this racist? Is it racist to worry about? I guess it's you're more worried that these people were in China and came back to the States than that they are Chinese people.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess it's not that. I just wanted to make sure I don't need to like scrub half this podcast because you said something bigoted, but I guess.
No.
Okay. That's a concern. Yeah.
No, it's like a thing. And like, it's very funny watching people try and engage with that in a way that's not shitty to other human beings.
Yeah.
But it's like, hey, be very careful. This has a long incubation period.
Yeah, interesting. So what is coronavirus? I mean, it sounds bad. How bad is it? Are people dying of this? Do we know?
People are dying. We don't really know how bad it's going to be yet because I've done a lot of research into it.
Sure.
Just because it's like the incubation's super long and it's just tough, you know, it's very difficult because it, you know, Ohio State does have a lot of Chinese students. There's a lot of travel and maybe it's here. I don't know. It's a thing people are worried about now.
And it's always a concern in big cities or college campuses with hundreds of thousands of people that like any densely populated area.
Yeah. You know, if it was in India and you had a lot of Indian students, then, you know, same deal. So,
yeah.
It's cool. I'm like trying to like backpedal.
No, as much as I'm giving you the stink eye to try to make you feel bad, you make a good point. There's communicable disease and it's concerning.
Yeah. So I have been thinking a lot about epidemics and pandemics and stuff like that. And also plagues.
Sure.
So I figured, hey, why not put this like anxiety research to good use? And talk about it on the episode today.
I like that. If necessity is the mother of invention, then the mother of well-done research is paranoia.
Is like laying awake in bed at midnight and being like, oh, geez, that incubation period is really long, huh? Like scrolling through my phone, worried I'm going to die.
Right. Probably not always the best idea. I mean, I've got tons of hypochondriac friends who are all over WebMD trying to diagnose themselves.
Yeah.
But I'll humor you. I'll listen to what you've put together today and maybe we can kind of figure out how much of this is legitimately worrisome and how much of it you can kind of let go and not worry about.
That's a good idea. That I like. So I'm going to need you to be real light and really alleviate some of my stress.
Well, I'll do what I do best, which is make light of serious situations.
Goof. So I guess let's get into it. Let's crack into today's topic with the official Pre-Dead Boys Crack Into the Topic moment, brought to you today by Polar. It's been a while since we had Polar.
You know, Max, we've consumed a lot of seltzer on this here program. We're kind of experts on the subject, right?
Uh-huh.
Polar is my favorite brand of seltzer. It beats everyone else.
Excellent. So good.
It's conclusive. Like, I will drink other seltzers, no problem, but Polar is always the best.
It's like a California thing, right? Where are they based?
California seltzer!
I don't know. Massachusetts. I got that about as bad as I could have.
Well, you know what they say. Massachusetts is kind of the California of the East.
California of the East Coast. Jesus. So the first thing I think we need to do, because a lot of this stuff, like epidemic, pandemic, plague, they can all have scare quotes around them all the time.
Right.
So I felt like this was even kind of tough to research because, you know, it's just like tough to figure out what terms people are using to refer to different things.
Hmm.
So I originally even thought that some of these terms were interchangeable, but I was incorrect. So I don't know. I figured we could go over the definitions because I was not aware of this. So how about you give us the definition breakdown? It's from good old Wikipedia.
Okay.
6 million articles. You see that?
6 million articles on Wikipedia?
They did it.
Congratulations.
Yeah, good for them.
An epidemic, a word first used in Homer's Odyssey and derived from Greek words meaning upon the people, is the rapid spread of infectious disease to a large number of people in a given population within a short period of time, usually 2 weeks or less. Epidemics can be contagious or spread by disease vectors, like fleas or mosquitoes. Epidemics are not necessarily deadly in and of themselves, and their bounds have expanded to include many new diseases that have developed over humanity's history. In contrast, the plague refers to a more specific disease or disease type. While the term was used to describe outbreaks going all the way back to the Plague of Athens in 430 BC, the title is now primarily applied to a bacterial disease caused by the bacterium Yersinia pestis.
Nice. Yeah, so it's kind of like a all squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are squares type thing, where all plagues are epidemics.
But not all epidemics are plagues.
Yes.
I see.
And some plagues even get that big old capital P plague, where it's like the plague.
Okay.
So it's
the
goofy. Yeah.
Ohio State the plague.
So it's goofy because there's epidemics, which is a quickly spreading disease.
Yeah.
Then there's pandemics, which go like transcontinental. And then there's the plague, which is a specific disease.
Okay. And a pandemic is a type of epidemic?
Yes.
Okay.
It's basically an epidemic that has spread further. So gotcha. Right now, coronavirus is an epidemic because it's pretty confined to China. But if more cases start showing up in the States, it'll be a pandemic.
Okay. A pandemic type of epidemic.
Yes.
Okay.
It's very difficult to say.
I'm glad to hear that. So now I know what to title the episode. That I don't have to title it Epidemics, Pandemics, Plagues. Like, I can't even say it straight. It's too many words.
No, well, I
epidemics
was,
it is.
Epidemics.
One word and simple.
It's very goofy because, like, an epidemic can be something like the flu.
Right.
And that's a virus. A pandemic would be like the Spanish flu, which killed people in both Europe and basically the whole world. Killed a lot of people.
The two parts of the world, Europe and the rest of it.
Europe and the rest of it. The sun never sets on the British Empire.
This podcast does not associate with the British Empire. We do not
or imperialism or anything like that. It's not great. And the plague is specifically a bacteria. So, again, all over the place here. But not only do they kill a lot of people, but they make us look at death in really extreme ways. And they cause a lot of social upheaval. It kind of upends society by death. And I think that's really interesting. There's kind of a cultural history of plagues that you can do. That's kind of neat.
Hmm.
So let's start back with one of the first recorded plagues, which was the aforementioned Plague of Athens that happened in Greece in 430 BC. So this was the epidemic that the like plague label gets slapped onto, because we're not actually sure what caused it. They didn't really have definitions for diseases at the time, and we can't really go back and look.
Hmm.
So we're kind of like, we don't really know what this was. So we just refer to it as like a blanket plague. And, you know, interestingly, we have records, contemporary records of this plague, notably from the History of the Peloponnesian War by Thucydides.
Thucydides. Okay.
But for a long time, modern people weren't actually sure if this even happened. We had to find like mass graves in Greece in 1994 before we were like, okay, yeah, this happened.
Yeah. Ancient Greece is kind of the civilization that cried Cyclops and Minotaur and
yeah,
Poseidon and Zeus fighting over shit. Like, I can understand why we kind of view all of their recorded shit with, you know, we like take it asterisk. With a grain of salt. Yeah.
It is cool, though, the epidemic first showed up in the Odyssey. It's neat.
Yeah.
I don't know. But here's an overview of what this plague did. It's very cool. Well, it's not cool. I'm going to walk that back. It was bad.
It was very cool how it slaughtered a lot of people. In 431 BCE, Athens was under attack by Sparta. Similar to how medieval peasants fled to castles in the face of attack, people living in the Athenian countryside packed into the city as the Spartan army approached. Overpopulation and poor hygiene combined to spread an unknown disease that killed an estimated 25% of the Athenian population. The symptoms of the epidemic included fever, inflammation in the eyes, sore throats, vomiting, extreme thirst, insomnia, and diarrhea. The symptoms are not consistent with any known disease and have been ascribed to the bubonic plague, typhus, smallpox, Ebola, and measles. Ironically, this disease outbreak probably staved off further attack by the Spartan army. Aware of the disease, the Spartans refused to invade the city, instead choosing to surround it and wait the plague out. Unfortunately, this meant bodies were piling up within the city and beginning to rot. Unable to bury the vast amounts of bodies within city limits, the Athenians resorted to burning the dead on massive funeral pyres. Fearing infection from the smoke of the bodies which covered the area, the Spartan army retreated until the plague had ended, thus temporarily sparing Athens.
Isn't that wild?
Huh.
Like, there were so many dead people that, like, this other army was like, we're actually not gonna go in there right now.
Interesting. So, it's interesting that they were aware of the disease, that they knew that there was something going on. Even in this day and age, when they didn't know what plagues or anything were, they were like, people keep dying in there. Let's wait this out.
Yeah.
But then seeing smoke come up out of it, where we're like, this is maybe too much. Let's go.
And it was just like it's described as like blankets of smoke for miles. This is 25% of the population of Athens. So it was an estimated 75,000 to 100,000 people.
In one city.
Yeah.
Man.
And, you know, this was also back 2,300 years ago. So the population as a whole was a lot smaller back then, but it was rough.
And it's during an invasion. So it had to be within a relatively short period of time if there's an army just waiting outside of the city.
Yeah.
That they just burned all of these bodies.
Well, that's the theory, is that the retreating Athenian soldiers brought it with them back into the city.
Right.
And because everyone just packed in there, it spread everywhere.
Real quick.
Yeah. I mean, it was bad too. It basically, so this was kind of like the end of Greece as well. Like, Greece is kind of already on the downturn. They would never really recover from this plague. And this kind of was like the final nail in the start of the fall of Greece. Like, they could have made it for a while, and then this happened, and they were just so, like, hamstrung by it that they couldn't get back, you know?
Right.
But this plague caused, like, anarchy in the city. It was bonkers. So, here's an excerpt describing what was going on in Athens at the time from History of the Peloponnesian War.
By far the most terrible feature in the malady was the dejection which ensued when any one felt himself sickening, for the despair into which they instantly fell took away their power of resistance and left them a much easier prey to the disorder. Besides which, there was the awful spectacle of men dying like sheep through having caught the infection in nursing each other. On the one hand, if they were afraid to visit each other, they perished from neglect. Indeed, many houses were emptied of their inmates for want of a nurse. On the other, if they ventured to do so, death was the consequence. All the burial rites before in use were entirely upset, and they buried the bodies as best they could, many from want of proper appliances, through so many of their friends having died already, had recourse to the most shameless sepulchre. Sometimes, getting the start of those who had raised a pile, they threw their own dead body upon the stranger's pyre and ignited it. Sometimes they tossed the corpse which they were carrying on the top of another that was burning, and so went off.
Yeah, it was brutal. They're just walking around with, like, bodies, and they're like, there's a pyre.
I like that it says, and so went off. At the function, they went off. Well, I mean, it was really lit.
Well, it was lit. There were.
Lighting bodies on fire.
I mean, this was still back when, like, people didn't understand germs. They didn't understand anything. So they were, like, still, like, in miasma theory. So if there was a big cloud of smoke, which had bodies burning in it, they thought you would get sick from that.
Right. Just being close to death.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the reason that the Spartan army was like, we're going to let you guys, like, figure this out. We'll be back in a little bit.
Right.
As there's, like, people, like, running, screaming from the city.
Burning bodies falling out of the city walls.
Yeah, it was a real mess. But, I mean, the mess meant that a lot of these people were buried in mass graves if they weren't burned. And then the graves were just covered over. You'd have hundreds of people being buried per day, and they would just get plowed over. So like I mentioned before, the way we found out about this plague wasn't because they had good evidence left behind. It was some Greek dudes who were doing construction for a subway.
Really?
Yeah. And they, like, were digging around and dug a hole and were like, oh, this is full of skeletons.
Yeah. Wow.
The grave that they found had about 250 skeletons in it, and they were packed, quote, helter-skelter, and with no soil between them.
Oh, my God.
Because they were just trying to get this, like, dealt with, you know? You don't right. have any sort of recourse for memorializing people. You know, Greeks at the time would bury people with, like, grave ornaments or grave gifts. Nothing in these.
Yeah, and they're probably at a premium for space, being in a walled-off city under attack.
Yeah, you can't go anywhere, so you just have to dig really low and then fill it in so you can put more bodies in there. But
stack them on up?
Yeah, it's kind of wild. But then for some reason, like, the Greek government just bulldozed it, and now it's like a parking garage.
Okay.
So I don't know why they did that, but yeah, it's kind of a weird, like, ending to that story.
Now it's a parking garage.
Yeah.
The wheels of history roll on.
So that was, like, the first big plague. You know, we're not in the capital P plagues yet, but it was big. And there were a lot of these epidemics that happened throughout history. Sometimes they were smallpox, sometimes typhus, but usually populations were still pretty spread out. You didn't have people packing into cities that often to spread disease. And if a plague did happen, it would be a smaller amount killed because people would just go out into the countryside.
Right.
But what we're going to talk about next is the first disease to do like big damage.
Big numbers.
Big numbers.
High score.
Yeah. That was the plague of Justinian in 541. And that killed somewhere between 13 and 26% of the world's population.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So like, that's how big we're talking now is world population.
Yeah. So imagine like the 500s, you know, not a lot going on. There's not a lot of people.
Sure.
25 to 50 million people died in this.
That's fucking crazy.
Just like the toll that these plagues can take on us.
Yeah.
Is staggering. It's scary to think that like we're not better at defending against these, you know?
Because
if they're quick enough, like we got nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
It's really bummer shit right now. Yeah, this is bummer shit. So let's brighten this up a bit. Do you remember the old cosi?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So cosi is
Center of Science and Institute.
Thank you. Institute?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, Center of Science and
Oops.
Center of Science and Industry.
Yeah,
that makes way more sense than what I said.
So you remember the old cosi that was like more downtown?
Yeah, if you're not a Columbus nerd like us, it's basically cosi was this museum and research center in downtown Columbus. I say was, but it still exists, and it's very cool. It's a fun place to visit. They have all these interactive exhibits. Yeah. But it's also like I guess they do research studies there and whatnot too. And I've got a friend who works there.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like a Smithsonian style thing. It's more like, I don't want to say kids museum either, but it's like kind of like a history center.
They definitely have kid friendly stuff like
interactive
exhibits and puzzles and games. And
yeah.
Last time I was there, they had a big Sherlock Holmes thing where you rummage around looking for clues and try to solve the mystery. And
yeah.
It was cool.
It's cool. Do you remember the diorama room at the old cosi? Where you'd walk down that hallway and it would be dioramas of like history?
Very vaguely. I think that was more boring for 6-year-old Dorian than like, you know, the stuff that makes your hair stand up on end.
Yeah.
Literally, like the electrified ball thing that you touch. And
so you don't remember the Black Death diorama that they had?
I do not.
It was insane. It was like a, you know, 25 by 25 by 25 foot cube that was just a diorama of people dying from the plague. And it was like, people invent fire, people invent the wheel, the plague, and then like the spaceships and stuff like that. It was very weird. And then it like emptied out at like the bubble station, where it was just different shapes and you would see which ones would make bubbles and which ones wouldn't. Very silly.
I remember that, like the weird interactive water area.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to try and like email them and try and get a picture, but it was kind of wild. Very silly. But the Black Death was, there's a reason that it's still like known today. And it's because it was easily the most devastating plague in history. The Black Death killed anywhere from 75 million to 200 million people.
What was the world population at that time?
Not much more than that. The world population was estimated to be about 475 million.
So nearly half of the world,
yep,
potentially, was about killed.
30 to 60% of Europe's population. It didn't make it to the Americas or Australia.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it was
just in Europe.
Yeah, Eurasia. So Europe and that, like, yeah. So right before the Ural Mountain border, it stopped because people just weren't going over the mountains back then. So
mountains, great deterrent of disease.
Yeah, I mean, especially back then.
Yeah, real interesting how like white people were coming out of Europe, taking over the rest of the world, saying we've got it figured out, we're from God. Meanwhile, a couple centuries earlier, their dumbasses were wiping themselves out with the plague.
Yeah, just getting annihilated.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bonkers. Like, this took the world, the global population, 200 years to recover.
Holy shit.
It was bad. And it's tough to put, like, firm brackets on something like a plague. But it probably went from about 1331 to 1353.
Okay.
So like 20 years of this, and we got to be very clear, it was not caused by rats.
No.
No, I mean, it was like the fleas that were on the rats, but...
Okay, well that's...
The fleas can be on anything.
That's true. Leave the rats out of this.
Yeah, I love rats.
They are very sweet animals.
Did you meet my rats when I had rats? Are you aware of this?
Yeah. No, I didn't.
I used to have pet rats. They were very cute. Bike and Pizza.
Those are very cute names.
They were very sweet, and they would like, if I would wear like a hoodie with a little pocket in the front, they like to be like safe and secluded, so they would climb in there and like snuggle up. They were very snuggly.
Oh, that's very cute.
Yeah, they're very sweet.
I love rats.
Big sweethearts. So what I'm going to have you read now is a firsthand account of the Black Death by an Italian writer named Giovanni Boccaccio.
Mamma mia.
He lived through the plague in Florence, so he was there. He saw this firsthand.
Wow. The symptoms were not the same as in the East, where a gush of blood from the nose was the plain sign of inevitable death. But it began both in men and women with certain swellings in the groin or under the armpit. They grew to the size of a small apple or an egg, more or less, and were vulgarly called tumors. These spots were a certain sign of death, just as the original tumor had been and still remained. No doctor's advice, no medicine, could overcome or alleviate this disease. An enormous number of ignorant men and women set up as doctors in addition to those who were trained. Either the disease was such that no treatment was possible, or the doctors were so ignorant that they did not know what caused it, and consequently could not administer the proper remedy. Most people died within about 3 days of the appearance of the tumors described.
This is gross. It's like a very aggressive form of this particular plague. Like 3 days is not long.
That's very aggressive.
Something I was really interested in looking into this, though, was how people reacted to this. You know, if you are just living somewhere and then 60% of your neighbors are dying, like, what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine there'd be just total panic and it would not be a fun time to live.
No. It wasn't too far off from that. And I'm going to have you read what people did, but it's interesting to kind of listen to this with that mindset of some people like just choosing to deny, and some people just being like, well, I guess I'm going to die. Those kind of like ranges of reactions folks can have to this. So,
and where is this from?
Oh, same guy.
Okay.
Giovanni Boccaccio.
Thank you.
Giovanni.
I wasn't trying to set you up to like read his name again, but I'm glad that you did read his name again. Giovanni Boccaccio. Some thought that moderate living would preserve them from the epidemic. They formed small communities, living entirely separate from everybody else. They shut themselves up in houses where there were no sick, eating very temperately, avoiding all excess, allowing no news or discussion of death and sickness, and passing the time in music and such pleasures. Others thought just the opposite. They thought the sure cure for the plague was to drink and be merry, to go about singing and amusing themselves, satisfying every appetite they could, laughing and jesting at what happened. They put their words into practice, spent day and night going from tavern to tavern, drinking wildly, or went into other people's houses doing only those things which pleased them. This they could easily do because everyone felt doomed and had abandoned his property, so that most houses became common property, and any stranger who went in made use of them as if he had owned them.
This is like purge rules.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, there are people who were just in total denial about this. And then because this was still in like vibe theory of disease,
which was
disease was caused by like bad vibes, basically, you know?
Okay.
Like these people legitimately thought that they could prevent the plague if they were happy.
Hmm.
Because the symptom of the plague was lethargy. You would just get extremely tired.
Okay. Yeah.
So they were like, okay, as far as we know, diseases are clouds. And if you get really tired, you get the plague shortly after. So therefore, if we don't get tired, we won't get the plague.
The solution is to party.
And that's what they did. Like just going like just like bar crawling and like breaking into people's houses and like it's bonkers.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can really blame them.
Yeah.
You probably can because it's still not cool to do whatever you want just because there's a plague.
Well, these are abandoned houses, it's saying.
That's
right?
Valid. That, yeah.
For the most part, it's not like they're really encroaching on other people's property.
Yeah.
Like they left fair and square, so make way for party, Dorian.
I imagine it would be kind of like a zombie apocalypse.
Can't die if I'm too wasted.
That's probably what they thought. But like, you just imagine you'd be walking around these cities and it would just be vacant, you know?
Right.
Like nothing going on. But then sometimes you would like walk past someone's house and they would just be like playing music inside. And you'd be like, hey, did you guys hear about the plague? And they'd be like,
yeah, cut that shit out, dude.
We don't talk about that in here. You're going to let the plague in. Yeah.
You're going to fuck up the vibe.
Don't harsh us. And like, well, a lot of folks in this kind of like extremely traumatic situation do resort to basically just stealing other people's houses. There are like people who do good things when faced with this stuff. I think we talked about this last week. But the story of Eme fits really well in here. And I think it's also kind of sweet. You remember this?
Eme.
Who Maybe was we Eme? Didn't. Okay. So Eme is not a person, but Eme is a village of about 1,000 people. And it's like smack dab in the middle of England.
Okay.
But in 1665, when there was another plague going around, they were hit by an outbreak of like the capital P plague, like the Black Death plague, that arrived in a shipment of cloth from London.
When the flea-infested cloth arrived from London, residents of Eme quickly began to notice symptoms of the plague. Many quickly succumbed to infection, and a meeting was called in the town hall to form a plan. In a remarkably noble decision, Eme decided to completely quarantine itself to prevent the spread of the plague to adjacent villages in the countryside. Boundary stones were set up around the village, beyond which no person was allowed to pass. When the plague had run its course, only 83 residents out of 350 had survived. Survival seemed to be completely random, and the town's gravedigger, Marshal Howe, survived, despite handling and burying many infected bodies. The town's strategy worked, however, and many nearby villages remained completely plague-free.
Isn't that, like, weirdly kind of sweet?
Yeah, it's very noble of them.
Yeah. And, you know, back then you couldn't, like, close highways. They just had to be, like, don't leave and trust that people didn't leave.
Right.
You know, like, they had to put some rocks up and be like, don't step over those rocks.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's really interesting what happens to the human mind when it's faced with conditions like this. There's denial. There's the people who are just like, we're gonna die, so we might as well just like party, you
right.
know,
just live hedonistically.
Yeah. And then there's people like this who kind of like, we're gonna see what happens, but we're gonna try and protect as many people as we can.
Right.
I think it's really interesting what happens to the brain in like massive death situations like this.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned zombie stories earlier as kind of an analogy, and it's funny how that really is our modern day way of trying to get around this sort of thing.
Yeah.
When there was a period of time where this was people's reality, that just dying for no discernible reason is a very real possibility. You just die of this thing that's going around and killing a bunch of people that we don't have a name for and we can't explain it.
Yeah.
And it is interesting that that's something that anytime we tell stories of apocalypse or the world ending or anything, that we still kind of have the same approaches. There's people who don't deal with it and act ignorant to it. There's people who party it up. There's people who try to rise to the occasion and do something, you know, virtuous with it.
Yeah. Here in America, we don't really ever have to really be worried about that. I don't know. I remember like swine flu.
Right.
And bird flu being like kind of scary.
Yeah, but there were still plenty of us that were on Twitter just making really
dunking on swine flu,
really stupid memes about it.
I mean, I guess the only like real analogy would be like nuclear war.
Sure.
But that's weird because that's not really a disease.
Right.
But I don't know. I was reading about the Fisher Protocol recently. Do you know what that is?
No.
So this is wild, and this is kind of like what EAM did, but for nuclear war. There was this guy, and his name was Roger Fisher, and he was like a professor guy. He was like a professor. His specialty was like negotiation and conflict management.
Yeah.
And I guess like the plague of modern day, which he was born in like 1922, so he was around. The plague of the modern day is nuclear weapons. Like that's the thing that can kill a lot of us very quickly,
you know? Right.
The difference between like an actual plague and nukes is that like we have control over nukes, you know?
Sure.
Like we could choose, and especially at this time, we could choose to send a bunch of missiles at Russia and have like mutually assured destruction.
Right.
But Fisher kind of did like he came up with like an EAM solution for nukes, which was having to make a really hard choice to prevent something really bad happening. And it was called the Fisher Protocol. I'm just going to read what he said. So this is what he wrote in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists in March 1981. So like peak Cold War, mutually assured destruction, stuff like that. My suggestion was quite simple. Put the needed nuclear code number in a little capsule and then implant that capsule right next to the heart of a volunteer. The volunteer would carry with him a big, heavy butcher knife as he accompanied the president. If ever the president wanted to fire nuclear weapons, the only way he could do so would be for him to first, with his own hands, to kill one human being. The president says, "George, I'm sorry, but tens of millions must die." He has to look at someone and realize what death is, what an innocent death is. Blood on the White House carpet. It's reality brought home. When I suggested this to friends in the Pentagon, they said, "My God, that's terrible. Having to kill someone would distort the president's judgment. He might never push the button."
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a shame to like make the president realize that he would have to kill somebody in order to launch nuclear weapons that would kill lots of people.
But it is interesting how this like massive death possibility has kind of gone from being a thing that like the natural world controlled to we control now.
Right.
And we kind of have to wrestle with like, do we want to basically eliminate a percentage of the world's population, not accidentally anymore, but at will?
It's very interesting because that's what gets lost as the world gets more populated. It's so hard to understand how many people's lives are actually affected and how much they are affected.
Yeah.
When you're just talking about numbers.
Yeah.
Even now, I can be amazed by the fact that 100 million people get killed by something, but it's still not, it doesn't really like click
fathom that,
to think,
you know?
About that is 100 million different, unique, individual people whose lives are completely altered by one event.
Yeah.
It's interesting. The Fisher, was it?
Yeah.
It's interesting that we can kind of come back to humanity with, you know, trying to understand things and some thought experiments and,
yeah,
you know, they, like, we don't need to be completely out of touch and abstract human life. We can kind of reverse that by taking the time to understand this.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, that must have been what was going through the minds of those people at EAM, where they're like, if we stay here, we're probably going to die. But if we leave, a lot more people are going to die because of us, you know?
Right.
So it's heavy. I don't know. Hmm. So to wrap this up, we can wrap up on like a bit of a lighter note. I did want to talk about plague doctors.
Hell yeah.
Just because they're fun.
Weird looking.
Yeah. Here's a, I put a photo in your notes. I know you don't need a photo of what plague doctors look like.
I really appreciate photos of them, though. We say photo, but this is a very dope-ass engraved illustration of a plague doctor.
Is it like a lithograph? Is that what those are?
It looks like it. Yeah.
How about you describe what, like, the costume of a plague doctor is?
Okay. He's in a big robe. It's sealed up. There's, like, you know, it's wrapped around his face. There's no air coming through. And the dude's wearing a bird mask. It's a bird with a beak.
Uh-huh.
And he's also wearing, like, I don't know, a big, wide, flat-brimmed hat on top. It's very silly. Also, is he wearing gloves with big talon nails?
I don't know if that is, like, talons or if they just, like, that was, like, a stylistic choice.
Are we meant to believe that this is not a human? That this is some kind of cryptid that heals diseases?
Is there, like, a horror movie with plague doctors?
I'm sure that there is, but I don't know of it off the top of my head.
Because they are extremely creepy looking.
Yeah, for sure.
But as much as we want to look at this and like dunk on it, this all had a purpose. This is the reasoning behind this ridiculous outfit.
The garments were invented by Charles de l'Orme in 1630 and were first used in Naples, but later spread to be used throughout Europe. The protective suit consisted of a light waxed fabric overcoat, a mask with glass eye openings, and a beak-shaped nose, typically stuffed with herbs, straw, and spices. Plague doctors would also commonly carry a cane to examine and direct patients without the need to make direct contact with the patient. The scented materials included juniper berry, roses, mint leaves, cloves, and myrrh. Due to the primitive understanding of disease at the time, it was believed this suit would sufficiently protect the doctor from miasma while tending to patients.
So let's go through this like bit by bit, because it is interesting how they developed this.
Yeah, and maybe would one good place to start be the word miasma? We've mentioned that a few times
now. We have.
In this episode and previous episodes, mm-hmm. There's this miasma theory.
Yep. So that is before we had germ theory, before people knew about germs, it was thought that disease was kind of just like a thing in the air.
Right. Bad air, as yeah. It was known.
Isn't that what it means?
Yeah. From Wikipedia, it says that miasma is a noxious form of quote unquote bad air, also known as night air.
Night air?
Yeah.
I didn't know that that's what... But yeah, I mean, it was just like bad stuff to breathe.
Right.
You know, and that's why, like, I think in earlier plagues, if someone died in your home, they would nail the windows of the house shut and not let anyone, like, open the doors or leave so that none of the air got out.
None of the bad air.
Yeah. Which really just meant that people were in there with a bunch of germs. And if they would have just let people, like, leave, it probably wouldn't have been that bad.
Yeah,
it
might have been better.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting to kind of debate the merits of it, but plague doctors thought that this was a protective garment. The overcoat they wore protected from, what do you think?
It says it was waxed fabric.
Uh-huh.
If it was wax, it was probably protected from liquids.
Uh-huh.
Maybe some blood?
Pustules.
Oh.
Yeah.
nasty stuff.
Yeah, because they would, you know, people would have, in the bubonic plague, you would get those lumps, those like tumor-like lumps.
Right.
And they would lance them. So they would cut them open. So you would want like a waxy coat so it would just like kind of slough off you.
Yeah.
And not soak into your normal clothes.
Right.
Which probably made a lot of people go like septic and, you know, not have a good time. But
yeah, well, we were learning.
We were figuring it out. The weird mask was basically just full of potpourri.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Probably smelled great up in there.
Yeah. Well, that's what they thought, that like the bad air was filtered out. It wasn't intentionally a bird mask, which is the thing a lot of people get wrong.
So, yeah, they just needed some place to store all of these herbs and spices.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they just made it look like this. So there was a hole on one end and kind of like a weird old timey, like weed pipe. You would, you would breathe in and it would suck the air, the bad air from outside, filter it through the potpourri that you had shoved in your mask, and you would inhale like the good smelling air after that.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a gas mask.
That herb makes makes it good air.
These old timey doctors are just getting like real blitzed. Yeah, and I mean the mask was like the same deal. You didn't want to have any air get into your body.
Right.
So that's why they had the mask with the hood, but you didn't want the hood falling off, so you got to keep it secured up top, which is like a hat.
Cool fedora.
Yeah. So this whole thing is basically like a primitive hazmat suit.
Right.
You know, you're sealed off from all outside air. You've got like a gas mask on. It looks insanely creepy, but like it's actually kind of smart. I don't know.
Yeah. Can I also talk briefly about the cane? Because in the illustration you sent me, okay, in the illustration you sent me, the doctor is holding this wand, and at the top is an hourglass and bat wings. And in the background, you see a plague doctor holding this and a crowd of people running away from him.
I don't know what the deal with that is.
That looks like a man is in a suit doing a very funny prank and scaring the fuck out of a crowd of people.
Like there's no plague going on at this point.
But it makes sense that they use that cane to kind of wave people down, like go that way.
Yeah.
To like poke patients so they don't have to touch them yet.
Yeah, because like you can't hear if your whole mouth and nose is covered by like potpourri. You just sound like this.
Right.
And people wouldn't understand.
What?
So you need to just wave that cane around to like tell people where to go.
Yeah, that makes a lot. It's very practical. Still not sure what the practicality of bat wings in an hourglass is at the tip, but, you know, had to make it look cool. At least.
Cutting boils, maybe. I don't know. So that's like a fun way that doctors used to be. And I thought that was like, you know, it's goofy and it's kind of goofy. It's goofy. It's a little scary. I wanted to talk very briefly about how a future plague might look with future doctors.
Okay.
So this is very brief because it's developing. I just learned about this today. Do you know about how they're handling coronavirus patients in America?
No.
So because we don't really know how the disease is spreading, like how effectively it is, or even really what it is at this point, we just know it is like kind of like the flu. They're keeping these people under extreme quarantine. Like you are not allowed to see anybody, but you still have to be treated. So there's like one reported case of this in Chicago and one in Washington State. And I found a Business Insider article from like 2 days ago about how the doctors in Washington State are treating this patient with robots.
With robots?
Yeah. Like, you know the Stop and Shop robot?
Yeah, like that weird pillar thing that's going up and down aisles and grocery stores and convenience stores. Okay, yeah, I've seen one of these.
Yeah, it's that. Like, that is your doctor now. Like, read this article. I'm completely serious. That is your doctor now.
The patient in Washington State infected with China's deadly Wuhan coronavirus is being treated in a 20-foot by 20-foot room and largely by a robot with a stethoscope. He is being treated in the Providence Regional Medical Center in Everett, Washington, where he was admitted to the Special Pathogens Unit on Monday after a trip to China. The man, who has not been publicly identified, is said to be in his 30s and the only person in the U.S. known as having the virus at time of publication. The robot treating the patient is equipped with a camera, microphone, and stethoscope to minimize doctors' contact with the virus.
So I get that, like, plagues are bad and you don't want a lot of people exposed to them. I don't really know what, like, a robot with a stethoscope, the effective medical treatment that that can provide.
Well, you know, at least a doctor doesn't have to come in contact with this person with this unknown virus.
Yeah. I can't imagine what this guy's life is like right now, though, because he's just kind of in a room by himself. And occasionally this robot wheels in with, like, food or pills and is like, beep, beep. Just take the pills.
Damn, do you think they can pipe in a Nintendo Switch for the poor guy? So I feel like you give him a copy of Breath of the Wild and he's probably good for however long you need him to stay in there. Yeah, I mean, if I know most people in their 30s, he's probably fine if he has a Nintendo Switch. If not, we need to start a GoFundMe so we can mail this man a Nintendo Switch.
For this poor dude.
While he's waiting out the coronavirus.
With his little robot friend.
Do you think he named the robot?
I would hope. I don't know. I don't know if that would make it better. I don't know if that would make it worse to, like, name your robot doctor.
Do you think he's hanging out with this robot and he's like, hey, robot, do you have anything other than a stethoscope? Like, do you have a pack of cards or anything? Any games?
Just trying to play, like, solitaire on the robot.
It's like, no. I am a medical robot only. I take this very seriously.
It's like the opposite of, like, it's like the iRobot robots where they can only do certain things.
Oh, what a buzzkill.
I mean, it is like, this might be the future of how we deal with plagues.
Right.
Is, like, to stop stuff from spreading, we just have to get, like, Roombas with pills on them to go around from, like, room to room.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fun to think about.
Yeah.
My wife works in a hospital, and I know that a lot of the patients there already complain about the lack of care they receive. So I don't know if it would be a good solution to replace all of the people with robots. I don't know.
Well, no, but hopefully we have very limited cases where it's someone with a plague that we don't know how to treat
and
we don't
know
how to prevent. Understandable in this case, but yeah, let's chill on the robots maybe.
Yeah. So I do feel a little better about this now.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel pretty good. And again, if you pipe in a Nintendo Switch, I'm good. If I get a plague of some kind, like, I'll be all right. I'll wait it out.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but my immune system is pretty strong.
Mine's good so far, too.
I like to keep sharp. I like to keep on my toes, keep my immune system rolling. I like to just get down on my hands and knees and lick the dirt every now and then when I'm outside. Just
and then
get a good lick.
When you got to deal with those bad chemicals by having good chemicals, you just take a swig of bleach every once in a while to take out the.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. Just so I'm clear, you're telling our listeners to drink bleach. Is that what you're.
Are you telling our listeners to lick dirt?
Well, it's better than licking bleach.
That is valid.
Fucking weird. Anyway, Max, thank you for putting this together. It's pretty chill.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Need to put
this was chill? You thought this was chill?
Yeah, it was pretty chill. You know, pretty easy.
60% of the world's population dying.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty chill.
Okay, that's cool.
Hey, that's what I think. What did you think? You, listening to this episode, we love hearing from y'all. Just hearing what you think about the episode and what you would do in a plague situation. Whether it's the Black Plague or nuclear devastation, or a zombie apocalypse. Sure, why not? Talk to us. We are at PreDeadBoys on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. Search for PreDeadBoys Podcast on Facebook. Join our Facebook group. You can join our Discord by messaging us on one of the above channels and asking Max and I to invite you. Discord's always bumping.
It's fun.
People chatting it up.
the cute animal sub Discord. I don't know what to call it.
It's a channel.
The cute animals channel is very nice.
Yeah, I appreciate the cats that were recently submitted in there.
Yeah.
We would love to have you guys join us and hang out and talk. So check those things out. If you want to support the podcast, the number one way you can do that is just tell people word of mouth. We don't advertise. We don't want to get into that shit. We also don't even really know where to start. Max and I just see a lot of bad commercials, and the Super Bowl's coming up, and supposedly the Planners mascot has died. Like, advertising is
that,
a mess.
I am sick. I am.
We don't understand why people are doing this dumb shit. I see, we didn't even talk about it until now, and I knew you were pissed off about it.
I'm mad, yeah.
Yeah, because I feel the same way. It's stupid. Advertising is stupid. Instead of advertising, we just want you to tell people about the show.
Yeah, just like talk to a friend.
Talk to real people in real life. Don't fucking do what commercials tell you to do.
It's stupid.
Step down off my soapbox. Anyway, tell people about the show. Really appreciate it. If you want to financially support us, the best way to do that is go to patreon.com/predeadboys and pledge $1 or $5 a month. When you do that, you get cool little rewards. If you pledge $5 a month, then you get wallpapers for your phone and desktop device. And also, if we get $100 a month in total pledges, we will start making bonus episodes. I started the outline for the bonus episode that we'll begin with.
Oh, yes.
I'm very excited to do it. I would like to tell you guys what it is, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. I want us to, you know, make enough money to pay for it, and then I'll tell y'all.
It's so cool, and I really want this to get pushed over the edge so Dorian stops talking to me about it.
So I can share my research with him and
it's
the
like
world.
It's like a plague doctor pustule that we need to burst.
There is probably crossover with our first bonus episode's topic, the fans of that topic and fans of plague doctors. There's probably
I think
a
that
lot
is absolutely
crossover.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely, you know, if you like morbid fun things, then you're going to love that first episode. So please donate to our Patreon. I want to give a shout out to our new patron, Kyla, a new $5 a month pledge.
Hey.
We really appreciate you. And Kyla is also found out. She got in touch with us. She trains cadaver dogs for a living.
Yeah, that is so dope.
And I really want to talk to you, Kyla, about your dogs and your job. That just sounds fascinating. But yeah, in the meantime, thank you so much for donating. It was very, very cool.
Absolutely. It's very sweet.
Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Bratcurse. You can check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com or Spotify, wherever you listen to music. You can look them up on YouTube. I don't give a shit. Look them up. Just
Google
look them
Play.
Up. Just do it. Just listen to them. Google Play is kind of falling apart, but, you know.
Are you off Google Play yet?
Yeah, I switched over to Spotify.
Oh, I made the jump.
Yeah, I'm on Spotify and creeping on what my friends are listening to.
Yeah.
And, yeah, if you ever want to send me some music, some good music recommendations. I still have to go through your best of 2019 playlist that you made.
Oh, yeah.
I remember you posted that in the Discord, and I still haven't listened to it. But
yeah. Yeah, go back and listen to that if you want. I put a little playlist of just stuff that I listened to while I was writing a lot of these episodes on the Facebook, Twitter, and Discord.
Yeah.
So go check it out. It was cool. It's fun.
Yeah. Go listen to those tunes. And thank you again for listening to our episode. Max, I have an interesting unconfirmed fact about COSI, the Science and Industry Museum here in Columbus.
Oh, yeah? What do you got for me?
So they moved locations, right?
In,
I think, the early 2000s or late 90s or something like that.
Yeah, I think they reopened with the millennium.
Yeah.
So
did you know that they left a lot of those dioramas in that building, the old building?
Are you serious?
Yes. I have a reliable account that those dioramas are still in existence in that building. Like, in the basement of that building, you can just go downstairs and there's like those dioramas still in existence. So if you want to get a photo of that Black Plague one, someone somewhere out there has them. But I can tell by your face that you are desperate to get inside that building now.
Yes. That gave me nightmares as a kid.
Well, if it gave you nightmares when it was part of a business that was open and populated, Imagine the nightmares it will give you when it's an abandoned, empty room.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm dying to get down there. I don't know if there is a legal and acceptable way to do that, but I would really like to know if there's a way that we can do that.
Worm your way down there.
Legally. I'm not going to incriminate myself on this podcast again. Again? Did I say that? I didn't mean again. I've never done that. Anyway,
the first time.
Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're going to rot. I do really appreciate someone made this website, oldcosi.com. Like the old logo and everything.
This is oldcosi.com. Oh my God, this is insane. Show your membership and enter the lobby. Pay and enter the lobby. Employee volunteer only. Go up a set of marble steps.
Oh God, I'm getting so much like nostalgic chills from just the lobby.
Oh, that plane.
Go down steps and look at exhibits.
This is like kind of hard. Like I'm having a hard time. Oh, I hated this thing.
Which thing?
The coal mine.
I think that's what's it. I think it's the coal mine is still there.
Oh, fuck that. That was so scary.
Yeah.
Health, Earth, history. Maybe that's a time tunnel. Okay, here we go. Into the time tunnel.
God, I remember this. This right? Song. Oh my God.
This is like freaking me out. I'm going to have to like really lean into this thing now. This is, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest website on the internet. And I like that it's, like, kind of difficult to figure out places.
Right.
What's outside the time tunnel?
Go look at honeybees.
I do remember just the wall of bees. That was back when we had bees, and it was, like, okay to imprison.
Now they are dying at an alarming rate.
20 years ago, we had Bob Hope, Steve Jobs, Johnny Bees. Now we have no Hope, no Jobs, and no Bees.
Johnny Bees.